Thank you. That was fun. Sorry it took me so long to find the tracks in between. I need to work on that as a performer. Does anybody have any questions about what just happened here, I guess? I'm happy to answer them. Or I can just tell you, hey, yes, so let's do it. Yeah. Yeah. I love samples. And one of the things that I wanted to do when I was building this set was be very specific about what I put on the Digitact. Because, you know, you have your plus drive, which is where you, like, have everything you could pull from. And then you have your sample pool for the project. So it's limited in both sense, so you kind of have to be a little bit careful about what you put on. But for me, for this one, I decided to go and grab a bunch of these old Zero G sample sets from like the 90s and 2000s. Zero G, what's it called? The data files. Yeah, that's the ones. And they're just this gold mine of like stuff you've heard. Like it's just like so many songs use these things. And it's so wonderful to like just like walk through the history of sampling with these. A lot of the stuff is probably not cleared at all. It wasn't cleared when the thing got released. But that's what makes it fun. It's like you hear all these drum loops and stuff and shit that you heard on the radio and realize that like it was just kind of like the Wild West back then. It's gotten a lot tamer now in terms of what you can do with sampling. So yeah, that's the big like top level question. As for like the way it works on here, I usually try to put like my hook sounds, like so sounds that have like a vocal quality or something like that on like 7 and 8. And then, you know, kick, snare. Then if I'm going to do bass, I'll put bass on 3. Clap usually is some form of clap. And then 5, 6, and 7 are up for grabs if I don't have another melodic sample on 7. But yeah, good question. Yeah. It's hard not to when you're using the Digitone because, like, it's FM. So, like, it sounds a lot like, I mean, FM synthesis calls upon, like, simple roots in terms of the math that it does, like, in terms of the waveforms, like, sines and stuff like that, and then, like, turns them into crazy shit with math. I think it's hard not to hear FM and not, it's hard to hear FM and not a little bit get pushed towards like wanting to make sort of like that glittery chiptune-y sort of like stuff. I don't have a lot of experience with demo scene stuff, so I can't say that it directly influenced me, but a lot of the stuff started on the Digitone as like ambient. Like I just started with this, with the patterns over here and tried to make them sound interesting and then brought the drums in later. So it was kind of like, oh, and the other constraint was each pattern is written in one of the available scale modes on the Digitone. So it's like each one is like a different like scale mode. So that was the main constraint for that. So it's just kind of like explore what you can do with the Digitone in terms of making it sound full on and interesting on a 4-track pattern and then go and like blast it with drums later. That was kind of my aesthetic with the whole thing. Does that answer your question? Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Which one's sending out master tempo?
The Digitone is doing the master tempo. Just because I started the patterns on here, so all the tempo data for each pattern was baked into the patterns as I made them over here, and then I made the Digitact follow suit. However, the audio is going the other way because I really rely on the Digitact's master compressor to slice off transients and make things sound a bit more like thuddy and pillowy, because otherwise I get really sharp transients throughout. So it's like a pretty high ratio compressor doing the Digitact just to like shave off some of the really, really harsh, punchy things. But I found that if I took the Digitone and I put it in there, if I fed the audio into the Digitact from the Digitone, that compressor just like destroyed it completely. So it's like compressed coming out of here and then going into the Digitone. And that seems to work pretty well. Hopefully we'll probably never get it, but if we could get a compressor on the Digitone, that would be rad. This guy knows what I'm talking about. is there anything else I can answer about this? Yeah.
There were some high kind of glitchy, almost granular sounds you had transition?
Yeah.
Well,
if there's transition, if it's a transition involved, then yeah, there's probably some live. Are you familiar with these boxes? All right, let me show you. There's two things here that are fun that you can do with this. The first is that, I think this pattern actually has that. So let me take, this doesn't need to play. That's not the right one. Sorry, I'm trying to find the pattern that I just played last. What was that? Was it? Spreadsheet. It was 11. That is not the tempo. Here, I'll just go to like this. And I'll... So I think I'm doing some of it here. If it's not doing it now, I can do it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to change this to this. So you pick a sound, like pick this, like this kind of weird percussion sound that you hear. It sounds like a, I don't know what it sounds like. One of the things you can do with the LFO is set the destination to a sample slot. So in the Digitect, you load all your samples into a pool and they're linearly like 0 through 127 or whatever. You can, if you have these sounds that have a granular nature to them, meaning they have like sort of like a skittery transient profile, like Foley works really, really well for this. What I like to do is I like to, you have to have them in a block in your sample pool for this to work because the LFO is now going to go through and pick from a group of samples to play. So let me see if I can make this work real quick. It's an LFO. It's however you want. So like, for instance, I just turned this up here. And you have to be really careful because it will pick from a whole bunch of samples. So you can see it gets a little silly. But this is usually when you're hearing like weird textures in my stuff, this is usually how I'm doing it. I'm picking like Foley and I'm having it like pick a new one. You can set the LFO to trig, so every single time the trig hits, it will reset the LFO, and then you change the shape to random, and now theoretically this is picking a new random sample every single time it plays. As for the granular sounds, I'm probably gonna have to put the mic down to show you this, but like there's this thing that I depended on a shit ton in these called Control All, and it's unique to these two, and I think the Syntax. Does anyone? Yeah, is in the Syntax as well. Okay, it's what makes these boxes my favorite. One of my favorite things to perform with, because while you have parameters for every single channel, you know you have to click the channel. You have to like track and then click the channel, and then like you have to go to the menu for that thing. And by the time you've done that, you have lost what you wanted to do. At least time has gone by and you can't do it. So what I do is I depend on Control All. And Control All is you hold down a button in the Digitect, it's function, and on the Digitone, it's MIDI. And whatever you change is changed relative in every single other track on the machine. So it's really, really fun. I'll do it with this real quick. So just imagine that I'm gonna reach for like tune, play direction, and bit reduce, and start and length. And you're probably gonna hear what you heard before. Sorry to have this. Okay, cool. happy to. Yeah, no problem. Any other questions? Yeah. No, I'm not really a DAW purist or a DAW-less purist, but I do have a thing with these boxes where, with a very few exceptions, every track that I played for you is just like one pattern. I don't do any arranging. There's one on here that I did two patterns, but I really like to just use mutes and control all to play back. Because I don't know, it just seems more fun to me. Like it doesn't always lead to like the most diverse arrangement, so to speak. However, it does allow me to like really like explore the timbres of like the device and stuff like that without having to think about like songs, so to speak. The moment that you start arranging through different patterns or something like that, you kind of do change the nature of what you're doing. So no, I haven't done that. I think Overbridge, which is the software version of this, would be useful to maybe massage some of the presets in a different environment, like this, especially with a digitone. But no, this hasn't really touched a computer at all. You want to know about my spreadsheet? It's Google Sheets. I'll just say, playing live set is relatively new thing to me, and knowing what's on each track is really, really helpful, because we talked about a little bit about like what samples go on what, and it's not the same each time. So each pattern has its own, you know, set of different samples on it. So it's important to keep track of that stuff. You don't want to accidentally start the track with something in that you don't want it to. And I mean, the real answer to this is just practice until you don't have to have a spreadsheet, obviously. But I'm not there yet. So spreadsheet. Yeah. What? Okay. One. Yeah. Yeah. I just talked about this, Matt. Oh, I like using mutes and control all to do stuff. You're not even listening anymore. Why am I? do you want me to? Okay, just get water. Oh, I like using mutes and control to do stuff as opposed to like switching between patterns. Though you can get you can maximize your changes through pattern changes, because you can have everything change all at once, like all the different, not just the harmonic content, meaning like what's playing back from a note perspective, but like all your presets can change, all your sounds can change. So it's really, really powerful. I just don't do it. If I was trying to write a song, I would. I'm the same thing on the rhythm too, just like scenes and one pattern and mutes. It works pretty well that way. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is the second version of I made an album last year called Soft Music to Do Nothing To. I think it might have been 2 years ago. That was my first foray into using these two boxes together. And that was sort of a much more subdued version of what you heard today. Like, I mean, it's completely different compositions, but like it doesn't like really try to go for beats or anything like that. For that one, I did have the analog heat involved, but I only used it for like warmth. Yeah, I didn't use it for filtering. So the thing with the heat, though, is like, there's only a very specific situation in which the heat would work for filtering here, and I would have to decide which box I'd want to put it on. So like you may be referring to like the like sort of like DJ style high pass low pass filters to bring the drums in and out and stuff like that. I could definitely I could involve the heat in here and like hook the Digitech into it and use the heat as a glorified like low pass filter or high pass filter. It just seems excessive. I was able to bring this in a backpack. I don't really have to like worry about it that much. But the heat's really cool. I think it's more interesting as like a creator device, like using the envelope followers and stuff like that. So if you ran your drums into it, you could get some really cool shit that way. But yeah, what I want is just like, I don't know, this probably exists, I just don't know what it would be. Just like a giant knob that's like a filter, and I can just go like that to it. That's all I want. Like. It has to be huge. Cool. Yeah. I've been thinking about that. Yeah, it really depends on what I'm trying to achieve for the set. The set gets built. I don't want to say the set gets built around the gear, but it does to an extent. Like, I have to commit to wanting to use a rack in a set, and I have to commit to knowing that I'm going to bring that rack to a venue. And this is literally my first performance in front of people ever. So it's like, I haven't really gotten to that point yet. I do have a, I have a rack I built for live gigs, which is ironic. I don't know. I'm playing at Velocity later this year. And I think it would be cool to bring Modular to that. I have a proof of concept of the whole thing. I've done like three live streams with it. It's just, it's a different animal when you're doing it in front of people, you know? And then you have to also like think about how you're going to bring it to the gig and all that shit. On a motorcycle, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I want to, like, there's the cool thing about Modular is that you can build, like we talked about the big filter knob, you can build exactly what you want to reach for. And it will do exactly what you want it to, exactly how you want it to, which is incredibly valuable when you're trying to build something that you want to do live. It's like, yo, I need a attenuator that like turns three things up at once. Sure, I could do that. These are just really, really immediate and fit in a backpack. So I'll tell you, if I had one choice though, to add to this, to a setup, the Modbap Osiris, I don't know if you guys have seen that oscillator. It's a wavetable oscillator through the Volt Freak filter. It's a new filter that came out from a guy that's been doing VCV rack stuff. It's terrifyingly filthy. It's so good. It's amazing. Like it just takes up the entire mix in a great way. It's really, really cool. So I'd probably bring that into the play if I could. Yeah. What's that? Maybe I just need to get panniers or something for the bike, and then I can put Modular in there. That seems like an appropriate way to do it. Cool. Well, thank you for listening. That was fun. I'm gonna give it back to Tom now. Buy something.
Jeremy, thank you so much. That was awesome. All right. So one more hand for Jeremy. Thank you so much. Thanks everyone for coming to the May showroom sessions. I don't think we've announced June, but June is going to be hot as well, so come on back for that.